At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
It's the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander, three great guests on today's show. First, Alan Boston, American original and originator in college basketball handicapping, with the Final Four in his list of the top 22 college basketball coaching performances from this past season, down to the Final Four once again, through the lens of his unique ratings system. We'll get to that. Followed by Chris Velika, the Bear, from ESPN's College Game Day, Stanford Stephen the Bear podcast, and Daily Wager. Not talking about draft props so much as we are, what would be the craziest things, from his perspective, immersed in college football, that any NFL teams could really do, that an NFL team rather could really do in this draft? What's the move or moves that would be the absolute stupidest? We'll talk to Chris about that. And finally, Michael Lombardi responding to criticism levied against him by Boomer Esiason about some remarks that Lombardi first made on a numbers game at VSiN. Got all that, Lombardi's reaction to it as well. Coming up, enjoy, right here on the Beating the Book podcast.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Tuesday morning to you. Excuse me. It is Gil Alexander right here on a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 204, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, on down the line. Appreciate you tuning in. Good show today. Michael Lombardi at the very tail end of the show to talk NFL draft with us. And Boomer Esiason went after Michael Lombardi. We'll get Michael's reaction. We'll actually play what Boomer said, get Michael's reaction to it. Michael doesn't care. Let me just spoiler alert. So we might have a nice reaction from Michael coming up. Chris Velika, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day, will join us as well. Not necessarily just to talk NFL draft props with him, but I want to get a perspective from a guy who is just as immersed in college football as anybody, who can just step us back for a second on this NFL draft, which is now less than 72 hours away, where he can just say, okay, if a team does this, they are being ridiculous based on what I saw on a football field. So we want to get into that with the Bear. We'll do so midway through the show. And on the heels of a day when I talked about what I thought was the biggest omission in the Michael Jordan, The Last Dance 30 for 30 doc on ESPN, which I truly did enjoy. I hate being this guy. Fact checking parts one and two. You will not want to miss this. Kind of deflating for me. But first, the end of our three-part series, and it is the Final Four. We didn't get a legit Final Four this year in college basketball, obviously, because of the pandemic and everything being shut down. But the Final Four, top four of Alan Boston's best college basketball coaching jobs from this past season. We welcome in once again our friend Alan Boston. Good morning, Alan. How are you, man?
Good morning.
Good morning.
To segue into this and to expedite matters, one final note on Joe Gallo.
Didn't really get to finish him. One might wonder, and this is a good way to like review things too. If Merrimack only improved 3 points on power ratings or 3.5 points, I forget which one it was. How do I have him as the fifth best coaching job of last year when others below him were +6, +7, +5.5 in improvement? The reason is when I talked about what that program number is to start, and especially with Merrimack, where it was their first year in Division One, we were out there completely guessing as to what their power rating is.
Right.
I give Matt from Three Man Weave the credit for this. He had read where Gallo was a terrific coach, and after we watched him play, was in total agreement that the team played a very cerebral brand of basketball. But we inherently started the program higher than everyone else. So within the program number, we had already given the coach a lot of props. So when I'm evaluating who did the best coaching job, it's not fair to take that piece of the number that I included for the coach away. So so let's do it another way. I started Merrimack at 73.5. I think most people started him in the high 60s. So I already started him 3.5, 4 points higher than most. So when they improved by +3.5, it doesn't include my analysis that this coach is fantastic, all right, and inherently started him higher. So most would have started him 69, and therefore most would have given him like +7 for the year in coaching points, in power rating points. I hope that makes sense.
It does make sense that Joe Gallo, who we mentioned, started following yesterday. We should also just give context before you launch into this, your final four. Matt, Kai, and Jim, who were frequent guests of A Numbers Game on VSiN all season long, courtesy of you, from Three Man Weave. The collaboration between you and them, very fruitful as you see it.
Oh, yeah. No, we had talked a little the year before, but this year it was full steam ahead, mostly with Matt. He was the one that Kai has a regular job, which takes up a lot of his time. And Jim had other endeavors that took up some of his time. But Matt had the most interest in really getting inside of how I approach it. And the other kids did a great job too. It was not, I'm not, there's no knocking anyone here. We crushed the first 2 weeks of the year, and it's something I haven't done for a long time, crushed the first 2 weeks. And the only difference I had this year was I went over every single team with them as to what we thought, how good they'd be. Just the first 2 weeks alone was enough, but the entire year played out very, very well. So
cool. Just wanted to give him a shout out.
No problemo.
Let's do number four.
So Merrimack, which only went up 3, would typically have gone up 6.5 or 7. So that's why Gallo gets way up there, because I can't take away those points from him because I thought he was really good to start. Okay,
I see. Might have been even higher otherwise.
Yeah, everyone else would have had him higher, and the reason I started the team higher was because of Gallo. So if he did a great job, and I already gave them 4 points for Gallo, I can't take them away when I'm analyzing who did the best coaching job.
Okay, cool, makes sense.
If that doesn't make any sense, I don't know how else to explain it.
It's beautiful.
Number four, Fran O'Hanlon, Lafayette. Lafayette, and again, I'll give a little history on O'Hanlon. He's so old, he played in the ABA for a year.
Wow.
Talking about a throwback. He coached overseas somewhat. He coached some ladies' high school in Philly, kind of bounced around a little bit. And then when Fran Dunphy took over at Penn in 1999, the legendary Fran Dunphy, I think it's safe to say now, he hired O'Hanlon as his assistant, and O'Hanlon was with Dunphy for 6 years, and then Lafayette offered the job. He took it, and he just finished his 25th year there, and this was probably his best coaching job. The team, so Lafayette had always been up against it. The Patriot League didn't offer scholarships. When they did finally agree to offer athletic scholarships, Lafayette was the last of the Patriot League to give them out to players. So O'Hanlon's always been kind of behind the eight ball at a school that it's very difficult to win with very strict academics that didn't offer scholarships until they were the last of the D1s, actually, besides the Ivies, which don't allow it at all. So Lafayette, the last 4 years prior to this year, their closing program numbers were 73, 70, 73 and a half, 73 and a half. Now, prior to that, they had also finished in the low 70s for many, many years. So it's safe to say that the program number for Lafayette is in the low 70s somewhere. And we've gone over what program number means. So I'm going to start Lafayette somewhere between 70 and 74, probably. We were going to start him higher, but then Alex Petrie, arguably the best player, got hurt in the preseason. He was done for the year. So I started Lafayette at 71 and a half. That's where we started him. Their first game was against Columbia. I made Columbia a three-point favorite. The closing line of the game was pick. Lafayette won 65-63. I chose not to change their rating based on that. Their next game was at St. Francis in New York, and I'll be pretty quick here. St. Francis closed 5.5, a 5.5-point favorite, and I closed I won't have a doctor here like I did Friday. This is fine. I made St. Francis a 5.5-point favorite. The closing line in the game was 1, and Lafayette lost by 1. So the line maker, once again, had it right. They had it more right with Columbia the first game. They had it more right this game. So I chose to upgrade Lafayette a 0.5 to 72. The next game against Princeton, who was beat up and struggling at the time, I had Princeton actually 13, and the line closed 5.5. And Lafayette won straight up. So once again, I was very, very wrong about Lafayette. So this time I chose to upgrade them 1.5. And so on and so on and so on. And so finally, when conference rolled around, this team was at 76. And they overcame the loss of yet another really good player to injury for the year and finished at 77. So with two key cogs out of the lineup, a program that's been struggling for years, that's been playing to the low 70s for years and years and years, O'Hanlon got this team to a 77. So 5.5 points above what he estimated, but obviously just a fantastic job because from out of nowhere, his 25th year at the school, he plays to the best number the program's ever played to. So great job, Fran.
All right, Francis O'Hanlon from Lafayette College Patriot League number 4. I'm going to make a overriding point on this momentarily, but I want you to get through a couple more here. So number 3, sir, best coaching job.
All right, so
year.
I wanted to go over a little bit how I adjusted the numbers to start, just so people have an idea of what I was doing, how I changed numbers. I threw a little bit of that out at him there. So
yeah, no, I love it.
Well, let me make Jones, Yale.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. James Jones from Yale.
No, go ahead. Go.
Well, here's the point, because I think this will relate directly. Yesterday I was talking about regular season records and the day before, and we talked about that offline. But one of the things that I think, and I think the main point of all this for people who are like, well, why are we, I get it's Allen's process for rankings, early in the season to late in the season. This correlates very nicely when you get it right, as you do, Alan, with what a team's ATS record, pre-flop ATS record, ends up being at the end of the season. I mean, on your top 22, North Florida, we had Matt Driscoll. They were the number one team against the spread in the country last year, 22-7. You had Hofstra on the list. They were the second best ATS team in the country with Joe Mahalik. South Dakota State was number 3 with Eric Henderson. On and on. By the way, Lafayette, who you just mentioned,
did not know that.
Lafayette was 29th. Yale, who you're about to mention with James Jones, 17th. So that's why this matters so much for people who miss that overriding point. But number 3, James Jones, Yale. Just wanted to point that.
Well, I thought it mattered much, just as an interesting. So very few people do their own work. What the hell? One second. Let me just.
Alan's getting a
call. Very few people do their own work in college basketball. So I thought it would be interesting to hear the actual part of the process of what I'm doing. And also, you're hearing all these Coach of the Year honors. I wanted to get at who truly did the best jobs.
Absolutely. That's why we love having you.
My opening number versus my closing number is a very accurate indicator for reasons I've said several times. So I thought that would be part of the interest to it. It is kind of intriguing that they match up with the teams that did well against the point spread. It probably means I got some of it right anyway.
Means you're pretty good.
Anyway, so James Jones at Yale. A little history on Mr. Jones. He played at Albany. He coached at Albany as assistant. And he, too, like, this has been a pretty consistent theme here with these coaches, has a great foundation for his future coaching prowess. Again, an assistant to Dick Kuchin, a legendary coach at Yale for years and years and years. And he also assisted for the great Larry Hunter at Ohio U, who retired a couple of years ago from Western Carolina. Just a terrific basketball mind. And those were his two assistant jobs before he got the Yale job. And what he's done at Yale is just extraordinary. Like I said before, the Ivies do not offer athletic scholarships. To get into Yale is virtually impossible. I do some alumni interviews for Penn, and I'll tell you that Yale is harder to get into in Penn. And there were, these are rough estimates, 45,000 applicants to Penn, and 3,500 got in. Like I said to somebody, I don't have to be I wasn't a math major at Penn, but I don't have to tell you that there's probably going to be more than one unhappy person when the acceptance and rejection letters come out. Yes. Very, very difficult to get in to get into an Ivy. To get into a lot of schools, it's hard. So already James Jones is up against it, where you can the Ivies can let in whoever they want. There's no rules. So yeah, he doesn't have to be an Einstein to be on the basketball team, but he sure as shit is not gonna be stupid and be on that basketball team. So he already has a limited number of people that he could recruit, given how difficult it is to get into the school. Yet year in and year out, Yale has just been just spectacular. This year, after he lost a guy to the pros and made the first round of the NCAA tournament, they were way, way behind. I think it was against LSU. They were like over their first 17 and threes and made that big, big run to backdoor the game. But arguably, one could say they were the right side anyway, because they got whatever they wanted every time down the floor and just didn't make any shots. So that's the team that James Jones had last year. Only one starter returned from that team. So we had a team that was 5 minutes away from beating LSU in the first round of the NCAA tournament and only has one player back from that team. So, I can't stress how hard it is to replace players at an Ivy school. So he has this home run team, which, by the way, was like the fourth straight year he's had some home run team. So that team ended at 88. And again, I like to mention Indiana's an 89 and a half, just to give you some idea of what an 88 means. Just extraordinary. This is an Ivy League school we're talking about.
Coming out of the Ivy League.
The year before, when he lost his point guard, his team was completely crippled. He ended at an 80, but the year prior to that, when they beat... all right, you're at break.
Yep. James Jones, Yale, number three, third best coaching job in America last season. Per Alan Boston. Coming back, 2-1, Chris Velika, Michael Lombardi as well on a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped.com has the tools for your family jewels. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code VSIN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off at manscaped.com with promo code VSIN. Chris Velika, Michael Lombardi still to come on the show today. It's Gil Alexander live in San Francisco. Alan Boston on his way to the top college basketball coaching job per his rankings, per his ratings this past season. You wanted to say one final word on number three, James Jones from Yale.
Well, I'd only talked about how difficult it is to get into Yale, and that his that the the market that he has to recruit from is limited. And in spite of that limited market, he just has these teams playing to numbers that are just insane. So coming off a year of 88, he had one player coming back. Now, typically, Yale is the low 80s type program. Okay, I didn't throw that out there. By the way, Maya Oney was the guy who was drafted.
We were talking off air. Yeah.
So he only had one starter coming back from last year. So I started them at 82, which is very reasonable. It's an Ivy League school. 82 is a good team. 82 is like a good Missouri Valley team. Just as an idea. And once again, his team just steadily rose up the rankings, finally ending at 88.5. They were the favorite to win the Ivy League tournament. Even though the Ivy League tournament was at Harvard this year, Yale was the favorite to make it. Now, in case you didn't hear what I said 88.5. Now, Yale lost a player to the pros. All right? A pro player at Yale. And yet, they got to 88.5. They closed at 88 last year with the pro player. This year, 88.5. I can't convey.
And you said Indiana was what, Alan?
What?
You said Indiana was what by comparison?
Indiana ended at 89.5.
It's amazing. Really is.
Right.
With, as you point out, five-star recruits, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, born five-star recruits. Yeah, just, I mean, pick a team and like UCLA ended at 88.5, exact same number. Okay. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yale and UCLA ended at the same power rating by my numbers. I don't have to say much more than that to say just how good this guy is. This guy's arguably the best coach in the country. Year in and year out, his teams improve. Every single year I've done this, his teams have gotten better, except when they lost all those players to injury. And even when he got beat up, he lost his point guard who ended up at Baylor, and his other really good player got hurt that year too. That team also improved as the year went on. It's just incredible what he does there. Number two, and we had a big battle here for the top two spots. Both these guys, their teams improved 8 points from start to finish. So since I wanted to give relevance to my starting number and closing number, these two guys had the top two places as far as net gain in power rating points. So then I had to determine the winner, and I was bouncing back and forth. And finally, number two is Mike McConathy at Northwestern State. A little history on him. He played at Louisiana Tech, which at the time was in the Southland Conference, by the way. He coached at some community college down there for a long, long time, and then took the Northwestern State job way back in the 1999, I think it was. His second year there, they were in a playing game. I think it may have been the first year they had the playing game. Don't quote me on that, but he was in the playing game, and he played Winthrop, coached by Greg Marshall. So little history there. In 2006, Northwestern State, as a 14 seed, beat Iowa in the first round, who was coached by Steve Alford. 2006 was that wild year. I won't rehash it, but that was the year of the upsets. That's the year that George Mason made the Final Four. Bradley beat Kansas, 13 seed versus 5. Wisconsin-Milwaukee, I think Bruce Pearl was the coach there. Another double-digit first-round upset. There were two other 12 seeds that won. Anyway, it was a wild year for the NCAA tournament. And then he made it again one other time, 2013, off the top of my head. I might be wrong about that. But it's been a while since they've had any run of success. The last 2 years, the team has been completely crippled by injuries and transfers. They've had top five worst run of luck in the country. So this year, the talent was lacking, to say the least. The program was certainly headed the wrong way. And it wouldn't have been hard to envision that maybe it was time for him to go. It wasn't his fault that players got hurt and players got poached. But, whoa.
All right, Michael McConathy from Northwestern State, the Demons of Northwestern State from the Southland Conference, number two. We will get to number one on Alan's list next on A Numbers Game at BC Sports Betting Network.
Hopefully.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
As the man said, it is a numbers game right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander, Sirius XM Channel 204. Getting to the top here of Alan Boston's list. And once again, and I know Alan wasn't thinking about this, but there is correlation between the best ATS teams in the country and the coaches of these teams, Northwestern State and Michael McConathy, which came in at number two here, 23rd best in the nation ATS, 17-9. Yale, James Jones, just before that, 17th best in the nation ATS at 18-10. By the way, there will be exceptions, and number one, just a spoiler alert, number one may be an exception to that correlation, but that's not exactly what we're talking about here. So number two, Alan, as we bring back in Alan Boston.
So yeah, back to McConathy. So I had a little note on him. So he got there. So the top two guys actually got there by different ways. So the players that kind of came on at the end of the year, the reason I'm giving McConathy a lot of credit is Jarris Roberson, one of his key players down the stretch, he only started the last four games. So McConathy got him in there as a starter only near the end of the year. His minutes increased as the year went on. This Trenton Master, he had an off-season injury that when it healed, McConathy got him in there, and he gave them a ton of quality minutes. He started the last 22 games. There was another guy, Jameer Gregg, started the last five games. So a lot of McConathy's changes in lineups allowed them to explode in power ratings. I started them. The program's been just bludgeoned. So they're typically a low 70s program. But the last bunch of years, they've been in the low 60s to high 60s. That's their range. The low 60s is because they had so many injuries. The high 60s is kind of where they've settled into. Years before that, they were a low 70s program. So most recently, they're a mid to high 60s program. So I started them at 68. And next to that 68, I had a little plus sign, meaning I think this team could improve because the program is typically better. And by the way, McConathy is a very, very good coach. Oh, one note. I saw Northwestern State play. So back in the dark ages, you could not bet on UNLV basketball. And you also, right, the casinos could not host games. So when Vegas had a tournament out here, the games were played at various high school gyms. So I recall going to watch Northwestern State play TCU. TCU at the time, coached by Billy Tubbs, by the way, another legend. I watched a Northwestern State TCU game. I think it was at Clark High School. And there were like three games going on at the same time at various high schools around Vegas. So that's how it used to be. And I remember Billy Tubbs said, so it's okay for us to walk through a casino and stay at a casino, but we can't play a game there? Seriously? And of course, he was
right.
Don't
get us started. Yes.
So I did see Northwestern State play at a high school in Las Vegas, and McConathy was the coach. That's how far back he goes. He's been there. That just finished his 21st year. So we started him at 68, and they were still going, by the way. They had won their first round game 79-62 over Texas A&M Community Corpus Christi. A winner for me, by the way, in the gambling world. In fact, I had a lot of luck with Northwestern State. I had this team tete-a-tete with having good ratings, by the way, gives you winners. And I won a lot of bets on Northwestern State this year. So my adjusting upward was good with them versus the point spread. They ended at 76. They ended a plus eight. And a lot of it, so as of, let's see here, pick a day. As of January 8th, the team was at 71 still. So they started 68.
Yeah.
Right. And that's coaching, right? That's they didn't have any injured players come back. He maybe he did a poor job. It just didn't have the right guys in there. But that's not, you can't argue that because the program never played to a number this high, like ever, not even in a heyday. Or maybe in a heyday, I shouldn't say that. You know, maybe back in the early 2000s when they had that, when they beat Iowa, they might have been somewhere around here. But I don't think so. This is as close
Alan,
to as good as
Alan,
they've
let
been.
Me, let me step in.
All right,
we got to get to number one.
Yep. And finally, number one, a team that also.
Drum roll.
finished at +8, but I'm going to give him a little more credit. Dan Earl at BMI.
Wow.
Strangely enough, I bet against this team a lot. So that's kind of ironic that here's a team I raised the most that I was betting against a lot. It took me a while to catch up to their rating. And when I did, again, what he did was mind-blowing. This team is a high 60s program. 3 years ago, 66. Last year, they ended at a 70. But from that team that ended at 70, Bubba Parham transferred to Georgia Tech. And they had, I think, three other players transfer. So, again, as has happened in many other years under Dan Earl, the team had players poached. So here he is once again with a young team. I think he had two or three starters returning. Let's call it 2.5. But what ultimately happened was he played his freshman. Oh, by the way, a little history on Dan Earl. He played at Penn State under Ed DeCellis, and he did his assistant coaching at Penn State under DeCellis, and then under DeCellis at Navy. Kind of ironic because DeCellis plays his grinded out half-court game, and Dan Earl plays fast and shoots a lot of threes. In fact, BMI was the number two in the country in three-pointers made last year. Little side note. And again, that probably has something to do with his success. But back to the point that Northwestern State used JUCOs to get to their rating, Dan Earl decided to use freshmen. It's kind of strange that players get poached for BMI, right? Matt and I talked about this, that if you go to BMI, you figure you're going to stay there, right? I mean, you're going there for a reason, and it's usually not basketball. It shows you how evil this is. Anyway, he ended up with the freshman of the year, Travis Eby. He made his first start December 21st against Virginia Tech. Another freshman, Camden Kerfman, he started the opener. And then I think it's Sean Conway. And he had a sophomore, Jake Stevens, that also contributed a lot. But a very, very, very young team that got better as the year went on. I started them at 66. And it took me a while to catch up to them, so it's not quite fair. But at the end of December, they were 72. At the end of January, they were 71.5. And they ended at 74. Yes.
I'm gonna step in because we've run out of time. But Dan Earl from VMI, you're number one. I want to just thank you on behalf of everybody because we never get a glimpse into this from someone as legit as you. So thank you, man. I appreciate all of this.
You're welcome.
Alan,
I hope someone learned something.
The legend. Well, we did. At BostonRed88 on Twitter. Coming back, Chris Felica next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
A little more than 48 hours away now from the 2020 NFL Draft. Sorry, wires crossed. Join us for the VSiN 2020 Draft Special, of course, Thursday night, April 23rd, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Our draft betcasters, Matt Eumanns, Michael Lombardi, Brent Musburger, Jonathan Von Tobel, other special guests, they'll all analyze the draft from our unique betting perspective, of course, and they'll track all the available props, let you know when each cashes, how they go either way. Check out the VSiN 2020 Draft Special live Thursday, April 23rd. It's two nights from now, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Still to come, the aforementioned Michael Lombardi. I got some things to talk to him about, including Boomer Esiason going after him. Lombardi will have some stuff to say. It all gets back to what Michael first said on this show. His comments about Tua Tagovailoa and two teams failing him on a physical. He broke that on this show, and then it sort of went like wildfire viral after that, and then Boomer has taken him to task, so Michael's got some stuff to say. But first, from ESPN, ESPN's College Game Day, Stanford Stephen the Bear podcast, and of course, Daily Wager, it's our buddy the Bear, Chris Felica. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. I enjoyed that on Sunday night as well, and there was one thing that I immediately caught on to, but I'm gonna not reveal it. I'm gonna see if you caught on to it, and I'll send you a text later about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yesterday I was saying on the show.
That was a great. I had not realized that. Obviously, you being a Bullets fan and probably watching that game, but I did not realize that his first game in that and that Jeff Leland takedown there. That was something. Imagine that. That does seem like a bit of an issue. Hey, look, there are 8 other episodes coming up in the series. Maybe that will be addressed some of. But you're right. That did seem like something that probably should have been brought up.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to make too big of a deal out of it. For those who missed it yesterday, I was talking about Jordan's first game, first half of the first game, first slam dunk attempt. He actually traveled, so it was after the whistle. He almost, you know, died on the court, basically. His career was almost ended right there. He's down on the floor for 30 seconds. But what I have to say later on the show is actually a little more disappointing, because I fact-checked this thing, and it was like a big part of the first 2 episodes, so it has to do with a detail in that documentary. Yeah, so we'll get into that after your appearance. But Chris, the reason I want you on here today, because you and I and E, our buddy, we text back and forth, as people know on this show. And you know, one of the things that had occurred to me yesterday, because I was like, well, you know, God, we've just beaten up this NFL draft. I've given all my bets. We're nearing it. We've said all there is to say, maybe, but you know, it's always changing. From you, I think the beauty of having someone like you, who no one is more immersed in college football than you are, and you're sort of my BS detector on all this, meaning that beyond the props, if we step back for a second, just as college football fans, pro football fans, and observers, you're a guy who could sort of poke holes in a lot of this. What is the single biggest draft rumor you've heard? Let's start at the top, where you're like, man, if this happens, these teams are crazy.
The talk about teams potentially taking Jalen Hurts at the back of the first round, are you kidding me? He had a great college career, but he was benched at Alabama because he couldn't throw the ball. That's not to say that he hasn't improved, but has he improved too much to be a first round NFL pick? Do teams think that they're going to get the second coming of Lamar Jackson, this dual threat guy who lit the league on it? No, they're a completely different player. Hurts is a completely different type of runner. Lamar has a much better arm than Jalen. Like in the first round or even the second round, don't you need to take either an immediate starter, an immediate contributor, or someone who you think within a year or two is going to be that? He's not that. He's neither. Like, I wouldn't even take him in the second round. I could see him going in the third round. It certainly with at some point in there, if you think this that he can be a change of pace guy and a short yardage player, he can be what Taysom Hill is for Sean Payton's offense. But this talk about Jalen Hurts going in the back of the first round is crazy.
And yet, like, if it happened, would you be flabbergasted? I guess maybe first round, still you would be, right? But I mean, these teams go crazy.
First round, I would be.
Yeah, first round, I still would be.
Yeah, first round, I would be. Yeah, that's just insane.
Yeah. All right, what's another one where you're like, okay, how does this make any sense? Because it's one of my biggest points through the years is like, do we lose our minds between what we saw in, you know, December and November and October? If by the time the draft, you know, there's so many of these examples, literally, like I remember when Michael Crabtree, this is just one example that comes to mind. When Michael Crabtree caught that touchdown pass for Texas Tech to beat Texas, I remember thinking at that very moment, and perhaps there was some exaggeration in my head at that moment. I was like, oh my God, this dude, you got to draft. And then he would fall and he'd fall, you know, and the sentiment just changes. But that's just one example, probably not a great one, but there's so many players through the years where our perception is it just, for whatever reason, we get into this frame of mind where it just completely alters. What's another one besides Jalen Hurts going first round or second?
I think the talk with the Giants, like there's some potential drama there. Like, oh, they're going to take Isaiah Simmons. So you're going to take a guy who you really don't know what position he's going to play on your defensive unit. He's probably going to need a very specific defensive unit in order to get to maximize his ability. And on the other side of the football, you've got, in theory, your quarterback of the future in Daniel Jones. You've got Saquon Barkley in his prime right now, and you're not going to get someone to help on the offensive line to help block for Barkley, help protect Jones' blind side or in pass pro, either side of the ball. You would think that he played a lot of right tackle. So, I mean, you would think he eventually would move over to left tackle, but they have a ton of problems on the offensive line right now. So you're telling me that the Giants are going to pass either on Worf's or Will's and take Isaiah Simmons. I just don't see that at all. It's interesting because you can look at a lot of the draft picks, and the people always like to see, like, what's a safe pick? What's a value pick? What's got a low bust factor? You know what's got a low bust factor is about the safest possible pick you can make? An offensive lineman from the University of Iowa. The Iowa tackles that have been taken in the first round: Brandon Scherff, Riley Reif, Brian Bulaga, Robert Gallery, Ross Verba, and John Holt. Every single one of those guys had a pretty darn good, productive, lengthy career. So I don't know. It'll be one of the. I can't see them passing up on one of those two tackles to take Simmons.
And Scherff is a great example. You know, the Redskins just plug him in, and it's like, 10 years of Brandon Scherff. As soon as you pick him, you're like, that's fine. We got 10 years of this guy. And sure enough, he's on his way to doing just that with the Redskins. About the offensive lineman, then, it follows which of the combinations, because we're talking about Wills, and we're talking about Becton, and we're talking about Werfs. Which is the order of that, like, getting back to our premise, which is what you find would be ultimately ridiculous if it happened? Like, who's the guy that would go first where you'd be like, how is this guy going before the others?
It would be Becton. I mean, everyone loves the upside and the potential, but with everything that's come out in the last couple of weeks about Becton and the potential drug test and the word that people worry about his weight issues, I think anyone who takes Becton ahead of either of those two guys, I'm not rooting against any of these kids. I don't want to see any of them. I hope they all get drafted high. I hope they all make a ton of money. I hope they all have a lengthy career. But we all know that's not the case. You just need to do your due diligence and figure out you're talking about a major financial investment from your organization. And I think if you go into something knowing that there is a better potential for an issue to arise with player A over player B or C, you want to err on the side of player B or C. And with Werfs and Wills, I don't think they have the same question marks and concerns that have arisen about Becton in the last couple of weeks. I if it were my team and I were making the pick, I certainly wouldn't want to take Becton ahead of Wills or Werfs. And I know that there is a prop out there at Caesars, and I think it's priced pretty significantly now, like, who will be taken first, Jedrick Wills or Mekhi Becton? And you would take Becton ahead of Wills? I wouldn't.
We're flashing it up on the screen right now at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. It is courtesy of Caesars. Jedrick Wills Jr. from Bama, -360. Mekhi Becton from Louisville at +280. Would you lay the -360 on that? Are you that confident on that?
Yes, I would. I totally would. I mean, I think there's a really good chance that Wills can go to the Giants. And again, this is something, being a college football guy, and you hit on there a little text chain with E and you and myself, and I had had it in the back of my head, and E brought it up, and he's exactly right. You can potentially see a relationship between Joe Judge and his ties to Alabama and the information he can get from Alabama on Wills. And you could make a very, very strong case that the Giants and Judge would make Wills their pick at four. And I know that there were some offshore books that had some pretty healthy prices on Wills to be the second offensive player taken in the draft.
Yeah, so many ways to play. That was the biggest thing that Drew Dinsick and I, when I had him on earlier in the week talking the draft, biggest thing about betting the draft, there are so many ways to slice the, you know, any individual pick. First offensive lineman taken, will this guy go exactly to that team? A prop that we just showed, one-on-one, head-to-head prop like that. So even if you're limited on any one of those, you could actually get some significant money down by slicing it up. More with Chris Felica, because I want to ask him about the third pick. Will the Lions really be drafting a corner at three? And this whole Jordan Love stuff. Really? We'll get Chris Felica's take on all that. Coming back, a numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Series XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, and Game Plus. It is Gil Alexander live in San Francisco. Thanks to Alan Boston for being on the show today and the last couple shows as well. True originator and original Alan Boston for being on the show. Michael Lombardi later. Chris Felica on with us now. It doesn't get better than Boston, Felica, and Lombardi. I am very blessed, and we will talk about the 30 for 30 doc, little fact check coming up as well. Chris, back on the show. You can follow Chris at Chris Felica, F-A-L-L-I-C-A on Twitter, of course, from ESPN's College Game Day. The glue, he wouldn't say this, but I'll say it for him, the glue that holds Game Day together. Daily Wager, and of course, Stan receiving the
Bear. Getting back to what Alan was talking about with those coaching rankings, I think – what that just did, and you said it for Alan, it was kind of a byproduct of it. But we often talk about, and he is definitely an advocate and a strong believer in coaching and correlation to ATS numbers. And the exercise that Alan just went through, that's a pretty darn good indicator that coaching does matter, especially in college football.
Yes.
And there is a correlation between head coaching ability and ATS success. So that was a really informative, fascinating exercise. It was good, too, because it was a lot of the coaches, unless you're a hardcore college basketball fan, a lot of people probably wouldn't know who the head coach of VMI was or schools like that. It was good to get that information out. I certainly enjoyed listening to that over the last few days.
I appreciate it. Gallo even started following us because he wanted to find out where he ended up. He ended up at number five out of Merrimack. Merrimack, of course, was ineligible for postseason tournaments anyway this year on a rise up to D1, still in that window. But yeah, I mean, it can't be repeated enough, right? We talk about it in the NFL more than anything, where it's like, God, like obviously Bill Belichick being the greatest example, but if you could only have one item at your disposal to handicap, let's take the NFL, an NFL football game. And I'm not talking about having the benefit of a box score retroactively, because if you have that, turnovers would obviously be the top thing. But if you could only power rank coaches, you'd probably do okay. You know, if that was the only thing in your quiver, because that just means so much in college basketball, such a coach's medium, as Alan was pointing out. And yeah, the ATS correlation, he wasn't even aware of that, he said. So, you know, by the way, number one, VMI did, you know, they were kind of middling ATS. So that was an interesting pick to have at the top there. All right, let's go with this, Chris. And I'm going to have to step in here and maybe interrupt you in the middle of this just to identify the station. But one of the things also NFL draft related, and again, the premise of this segment is stuff that could happen that forget about your props necessarily, but as just a college football fan and keen observer, you'd be like, what are they doing? Number three, Detroit Lions. You know, they're kind of screwed because I'm not sure any team really does want to trade up for Tua or Justin Herbert. And yet they're in this position where when it comes to need, do you really draft a cornerback at number three? Like, that's the biggest thing that I've talked about with Okuda early on is they could probably get him six or seven, a little further down. Will a team give them that opportunity, or will they have to draft Okuda if that's who they want to replace Darius Slay ostensibly at number three? A defensive tackle, all of a sudden, Derek Brown from Auburn, he's really moved up in some of these mock drafts. I just had Evan Silva on yesterday. All of a sudden, a lot of mockers are like, nope, they could go with Derek Brown at number three. Again, another guy, really, really good. And again, as you point out very, very keenly, everybody wants all these guys to be drafted high and to make tons of money. But he's probably a guy they could get further down. But the Lions might just be trapped at number three drafting either of these two guys. And so the question to you is, wow, what do they do at number three? Is it worth the draft capital to actually pick one of those players? It's Chris Felica. It's Gil Alexander. It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. What's the answer, Chris?
You kind of hit on it there, because everyone is just under the assumption the draft begins in three, just we the Burrow go one, Chase Young will go two, and three is the spot where it's going to be. But yeah, the Lions are kind of in no man's land right here, because I've heard that the Dolphins and Chargers, neither of them are itching to jump up a couple of spots. You know the Giants are taking the quarterback at four. So it's like, okay, Dolphins are at five. We'll take our pick of Tua or Herbert, and we'll move on and let Chargers to take whoever's left. And that seems to be the assumption. But again, can you – and Seth Walder hit on a little of this as well on your show even last week or 2 weeks ago about do you just bite the bullet and say, you know what, we've got Matthew Stafford. We're going to take one of the quarterbacks, and at least we have either a backup or a successor or trade capital. Because if you look at the defensive backs that have been taken in the top three, it's Sean Springs, Eric Turner, Bruce Pickens, and Benny Blades. And that's it. It's like unprecedented to take a cornerback, a defensive back, that high. Now, the reason why, in theory, you want to trade back, you can more so justify taking a DB at five. Because once you get to five, now you're talking about guys like Patrick Peterson, Berry, Sean Taylor, Deion, Mike Haynes. These are all players that were taken fifth overall. So you're able to still get that player in need, back a couple of picks, gain a pick later on in the draft. And that's the ideal situation. But again, I don't know if they're coming up. So would it ultimately shock me if they just said, you know what, and Seth is in agreement on this, like, do you just take the quarterback? I don't know if they'll do that. I think the Lions are in a position where they totally need to take someone that's going to help them this year, or Seth's coaching staff is going to be gone. But it seems to me like a player like Derek Brown or Kinlaw or someone like that would have a bigger impact on your team than it would having a defensive back. That just me. But taking a DB at three is just so unprecedented that I don't know how you do that. Like, is Jeff Okuda considered to be in a class like Sean Springs was, or Eric Turner, or Patrick Peterson, or Sean Champ Taylor? Bailey. I don't think he is.
Champ Bailey? Yeah, any of these guys. Think he is. All right. Then speaking of towards the top of the draft, let me just take a guy like Justin Herbert. Because as we get immersed in all of this pre-draft talk, there's this notion now, okay, well, you know, Tua was the favorite to go before Justin Herbert for so many weeks, and now all of a sudden it's Justin Herbert. And I guess my question to you would be, like, and I hate to be so blunt about it, Chris, but when you watch Justin Herbert at Oregon, was there any part of you that was like, oh, I've got to have this guy?
Maybe parts of a couple of games, but
that's what I'm saying.
Like the USC game, a great game as a freshman. It was like, wow, you can see this kid or sophomore rather, him really making an improvement. His QBR numbers actually declined from sophomore, junior, in the last 3 years. It actually got worse. And like, if you look at like his quarterback rating, again, I'm not saying QBR is an end-all metric, that is a surefire indicator of NFL success. But if you look at Justin Herbert's QBR this year against Power 5 teams, it's worse than what Tyler Huntley had. It's worse than what Jack Cohen of Wisconsin had. It's worse than what Shea Patterson of Michigan had. It's worse than Bright Price Perkins of Virginia. And it's worse than Jake Fromm. So it's like the numbers don't like match the perception of what this kid is. And then in watching the game, being in Tempe in that Arizona State game, watching that game, watching being in attendance of the Pac-12 championship game, watching that game, being in attendance at the Rose Bowl and watching the working that game, it was like there were times that it appeared that Oregon and Arroyo and or Cristobal, whoever was making the decisions, it almost looked like they didn't trust it to throw the ball. I mean, he was the MVP of the Rose Bowl with his legs, but it was like watching him throw, it was an exercise in like cringing, like where is the ball going to go? So look, I'm sure there's a team out there that's going to think that they can correct this and put it in a system and make this better. But I sure as heck couldn't take him in the top five.
So to the, and I don't want to use the word apologists because that seems loaded, but to the people that would counter that and say, well, about that coaching really did hold him down. He could be much better. You don't fully or even maybe even go halfway in accepting that is what I'm getting.
No, I would buy a little bit of that. And again, I don't consider, I am not an on the field X and O football savant or being able to pick up on little things that really good coaches, really good executives, really good draft evaluations might be able to say, hey, this is something clearly, how did Arroyo and Cristobal miss this? This is an easy stick. I'm not saying that I could be able to pick that out. But I certainly, look, if someone obviously is going to think that they are, I just don't know. You look at his measurables, and the kid is a great kid, but I don't know, man. I have a hard time taking him to the top five.
Me too, man. Me too. Jordan Love, obviously predicted to be the fourth quarterback taken after Burrow, Tua, and Herbert in whatever order. Tua Tagovailoa, that is, or Justin Herbert in any order. Jordan Love from Utah State. The arm is awesome. Accuracy, maybe not his greatest trait. And Tim Hasselbeck on Your Air did a great piece on Jordan Love that oftentimes he just kind of misses the gimme passes. This first round talk, and I get it, NFL GMs and NFL front offices go quarterback gaga, maybe justifiably so. It's a quarterback league. When wanting to get a rookie quarterback that will turn out to be a Hall of Famer or a perennial All Pro, Jordan Love, top 20 pick. Let's couch it that way, or even first round pick, however you want to answer it. Was there anything you saw with him where you're like, oh, this dude's a first rounder?
No, and with the piece that you mentioned, like if you look at catchable ball rate, which kind of hits on a little bit of like great arm, but you kind of don't know where it's going. His catchable ball rate was 73%. It's about nearly 30% of his passes were deemed to be uncatchable. Like if you look at catchable ball rate, Joe Burrow's catchable ball rate was 87%. Tua's was 82%. Even Justin Herbert, who we just broke down, his was 77%, which isn't much better than what you're in the numbers, but it's still better than that. It seems like Love would be a guy that a few years ago, like if you wanted to get like Russell Wilson was picked where he was, like people are looking for those types of players and like willing to jump the gun a little bit and take them much higher than they should be. Like if you were taking Love, you know, like in the second round, like, you know what? You could see maybe a developmental pick. If you've got a quarterback who's going to be there for a while and you can groom him, you could justify that, I think. But first round, I don't know. Again, Utah State does not have the resources and the players that a lot of these Power 5 teams do, and his numbers obviously took a big step back when he left a lot of his production from 2018. But if you look at the games against the three Power 5 teams that he played, LSU this year, Wake, and Michigan State, he had three touchdown passes, eight interceptions, and his QBR was 48. Now, again, he doesn't have an offensive line that can compete every down against some of the defensive players that they have. But that would worry me that against the better defenses that he faced, he really, really struggled. So, again, in college, in the Mountain West, you could probably get away with some of those uncatchable balls, and they aren't always going to be intercepted. But against NFL defenses, those incompletions that are off target, there's a much better chance that they're going to turn into interceptions. And you can't turn the ball over at that level. That little interception happened with Jameis Winston, all the interceptions that he had, despite being in the league in pass yards, he was deemed expendable. So, again, I don't know. Top 20, first round, someone's going to take him. But, again, you take a step back and you look at it, it's like, really? You're going to take a top 20 pick on this guy? People think that they can people think that they can hear all the problems and they have all the answers, and that's great if they have a ton of confidence in their ability, but just a lot of times it's not gonna work out.
Yeah, and again, we are so much more concerned from our corner of the world with our bets and with our draft props. So I do think it's worthwhile to just step back, and you're the perfect guy to do it with, and just be like, what are we doing? Like, seriously, after our props cash or don't, What are these teams done? You know, and there's an endless number of subjects or positions we can do this for in college football or for the NFL draft in a couple nights, Chris. One of which is the often not talked about running back position, which obviously through the evolution of the game has in the NFL, you know, to say it's been de-emphasized and doesn't mean as much would be the understatement of the world from our childhood till now. So, you know, most projections have maybe DeAndre Swift from Georgia goes in the first round. Maybe he doesn't. A, is he the best back? And then more interestingly for me, after Swift, if you think he's the best, projecting to the top level, maybe you do, maybe you don't. What's your pecking order with these guys? Because I'm hearing a lot of Jonathan Taylor talk now. What's your thoughts there?
I think Swift probably is the best, but I don't think it is like night and day. Like if you take DeAndre, if you take J.K. Dobbins, is that considered that much of a fall off? From DeAndre Swift, if you take Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is that much of a drop off from DeAndre Swift? I don't think so. But I'm with you. Like, look, again, college football, there wasn't a kid out there who you rooted for and appreciated. With Jonathan Taylor, great kid, but it's always a but. With me, Mr. Contrarian, Mr. Negative, there's always a but. You're going to take this guy back into the first round and pay him first round money. The last 3 years, 968 touches and 18 fumbles. That's 968. That is a ton of workload on that body. If you look at Dobbins in that same time span, he had 200 fewer touches. And he only had 5 fumbles. If you look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he had 500 fewer touches in that time span and only 2 fumbles. I mean, that could be like an extra season tight number of workload for Taylor, and along with his propensity to put the ball on the ground, you're gonna give that guy a first round contract where you might not be getting much out of him in like year 3. I don't know. Like, get him in the second round, less money. You could put him in certain situations in the offense, fine. But for him to be an every down type back in a first round contract, I don't know. I would much rather take Dobbins or Edwards-Helaire in the second round, at the top of that second round, than I would taking a first round pick on Taylor.
I hadn't realized 18 fumbles for Jonathan Taylor. I had not realized that.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, I let you go with this, and it is the contractual obligation question, which is Tua. And listen, we can slice and dice this draft any which way, but really the most compelling player here and the player that might have the most variance in where he could get picked is Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa. There certainly hasn't been a player in college football that we've talked about more in his brief college football career. Started with the bang and then ended in what could have been tragedy, really, with his injury. And when I say a bang, I mean a national championship. It doesn't get a bigger bang than that. What do you do? I mean, where do you think, if you're an NFL GM, how much do you covet Tua given the injuries? How cautious are you? What's your overall opinion on it?
Unfortunately, I would have to be super cautious. It pains me to say that because, again, watching him at Alabama and just the type of kid and the type of family he comes from, I would love to see him have a lengthy, healthy NFL career. But you just look at the 2 years and it always seemed like there was some type of little nagging injury that he had. Having said that, I mean, there are times you look back in draft histories with a guy like Matthew Stafford coming out at all. He's always hurt. And then he was pretty healthy in his NFL career until very recently. Or you look at a guy like Deshaun Watson, who's like, oh, he played 50, whatever it was, starts at Clemson, and then he gets hurt. So, I mean, injury, we talk about this with our baseball bets about you're handicapping injury and you really can't do it.
Uh-huh.
You really can't do it. But at the same time in football, with a starting quarterback, you kind of can. And I wonder if at times there's this perception that because Tua replaced Jalen Hurts in that Alabama offense, that maybe there was a perception that he was more mobile or more of a runner than he actually is, or maybe he was trying to show that he was more of a runner or more mobile than he actually is, when he's really not. He's a pocket quarterback, and I think at times some of the injuries that he had was him just trying to elude pressure and maybe just not throw the ball away, or maybe not just take a sack. And you can teach him to do that, and you're confident in your ability to do that. You might take him a little bit higher than usual, but yeah, I think someone will take him in the top 10, but I would unfortunately have some reservations about that. Look, those surgeries at Alabama allegedly were to make the ankle tighter and stronger and help them long term. So we'll see. Like, is this something that you're talking about? Maybe it won't rear its ugly head till 8 years down the road, 10 years down the road. But I guess you look at what type of window do you have to get the best out of this kid, and hopefully he stays healthy. If you want to take the risk that you're going to get four great years out of the guy, and maybe you make the playoffs, or maybe you make the Super Bowl, or you turn your franchise around, you take it. But if you're looking at someone who really is a long-term deal, I don't know.
Yeah, and we love Tua. It needs to be stressed. We all love the kid. Chris Velika. Chris, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, bud. Talk to you soon.
Chris Velika, ESPN's College Game Day, coming back.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
What better time than draft week to play Quick Picks? Quick Picks is a new betting game featuring all-time greats from the NFL. If you're looking for action during the shutdown, how about Quick Picks Classic? It matches superstars from then and now using historical stats to determine winners. Who was better in their prime, Aaron or Peyton, Julio or DeAndre, Zeke or AP? Now with Quick Picks Classic, you can play these matchups. It takes less than a minute to create your ticket. Spend as little as 10 cents. Win as much as $50,000. And for a limited time, VSiN customers get this special offer. Get a dollar-for-dollar match up to $100 when you sign up for a new Quick Picks account. Go to quickpicks.com/VSiN bonus. Got to be 21 and a resident where Quick Picks is offered. That's VSiN.com/VSiN bonus. Start playing Quick Picks Classic now. Skill Alexander, live from San Francisco. Danny Burke in the studio. Before we get back into football here for a second, Danny, I'm almost apologetic about this because I want to stress how much I love the 30 for 30 franchise and how much I still enjoyed the doc, despite the fact, the 30 for 30 Last Dance doc, despite the fact that yesterday I came on and said, oh, I wish they had shown this Jeff Ruland, Michael Jordan spill in game one of his career. And then today, much broader than that, like one of the key themes of part two of that was this Jerry Krause, Michael Jordan conflict about limiting him on minutes, a minutes restriction. And that's not even close to being the impression that the facts show that it's not even close to being the anywhere near the impression they were given. So it makes me wonder, like, how many other things in there might I need to question? And by the way, you know, maybe did Scottie Pippen really, was he really a manager at first in Central Arkansas? Like, I'm just throwing out some stuff. There's other stuff in there that I didn't find on my own. There's one other detail that we just found out about that is clearly not right either. Maybe I'll bring it up on a subsequent show. So it's not like, but this is a big thing for me. So anyway, I sheepishly pointed out. I don't know how you feel about me pointing it out, Danny, but I feel like I had to.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, no, don't tell me. But at the same time, you need to know, because when you're watching these documentaries, whatever it may be, you assume that everything is factual, considering they're studying just, you know, this one subject. So it makes sense that it would be something that you would really want to search and find out about, and more stuff continuing on, considering we have 8 more episodes. So it's not enough to where me personally, you pointing it out, it doesn't really ruin anything for me. It's just kind of something where it's like, oh, I'm surprised it went that direction, if anything. It's not more that it, you know, ruined his character or something. It didn't really alter anything, I assume, in anybody's minds. But like you said, it's interesting to note, and it deserves to be factual. So,
well, yeah, let's put it this way. Am I still going to watch parts 3 through 10? Of course I am. I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I'm an MJ. I mean, this is the thing. And it needs to be stressed, no one was more of an MJ freak than I was in junior high and high school and beyond. Nothing was as big as college hoops. I mean, really, when you grow up in the DC area, it's the Redskins during the fall, and then it's basketball. It's college basketball. It's high school basketball. I went to basketball camp with all the DC greats who were like my coaches and went on to college basketball fame. So like no one was more Jordan and ACC obsessed than we were. So anyway, and then into his NBA career. So I just felt the need to point it out. But yeah, is it going to take me away from watching it? Of course not. But, you know, just to set the record straight. Back to football, Danny. We have Michael Lombardi coming up. And on his podcast this week, the GM Shuffle, he responded to Boomer Esiason taking shots at him. Former Cincinnati Bengal, University of Maryland great, Boomer Esiason, who now does so many things in the media, national and local at WFAN in New York. Boomer was taking some shots at Michael Lombardi for something that Michael Lombardi has been talking about for the last 2 weeks, but actually talked about first here, specifically, not on the network, but specifically on a numbers game at VSiN exactly 2 weeks ago. Let's roll that clip of what Michael had to say then. Can you give us some sense of the inside scoop of all of that, or and of how all this really goes down? Or maybe there's a crazy story or two that you have or have not shared before about this time of year that just would blow our minds.
Well, I mean, this time of the year is really misinformation time, right? I mean, it's really about, you know, what data do you believe? Where are you getting your data from? It's a little bit like the CIA. You've got to trust, you know, who is your contact? Who are you working? Where are you trying to find information out? And how are you not giving information out? And there's so many tales of this time of the year where the agents stir the pot. You know, the agents create this illusion, which is what their job is to do. And I don't fault them at all for it. I think they're very good at doing it, is to create this illusion like Tua's healthy, right? Like that's an illusion, okay?
Right.
That was reported in the day of the coronavirus. We read that Tua's healthy. And most people living in America accepted that. Yes, he's healthy.
That's right.
Meanwhile, that's right. I've had two teams in the Meanwhile, I've had two teams in the past 10 days tell me he's failed their physical. And I said,
man.
For what? And they said, for a host of things. You know, he broke his wrist the first day of spring ball, I think 2 years ago. When he came back, he broke it again. I mean, we've never talked about a broken wrist with him, right? We just talked about his hip. His hip is fine. It's really about understanding that you've got to be able to separate the noise from what you're really trying to focus on. And I think it happens all the time. And I think the one good thing about this draft is there's less noise.
So that was what Lombardi had to say on our air 2 weeks ago on this show. And I didn't let it slide. We didn't have this on the tape right there, but I didn't let it slide. I followed that up immediately with, I don't want to gloss over that. This is, I'm quoting myself now from the show. I don't want to gloss over that. Can you repeat that? How many physicals has he failed? To which Lombardi further replied, well, I've spoken to a lot of teams. I've talked to two teams in the last 10 days. I've spoken to two teams who have him failed on their board as physicals, unquote. So then Lombardi went on to say it on his own podcast, and it got picked up all kinds of different ways. But he's been taking a test, and specifically Boomer Esiason did that. So I want to play Boomer back to Michael, get his response to it. And then of course, ask him a whole series of questions as well, Danny, because of course, I have those to, share with him as well. And by the way, you feel free to jump in with any questions of your own, Danny, as well, for Michael Lombardi, who of course is the host of the Lombardi Line here at VSiN. And we'll have his show coming up at the top of the hour right after I talk to him, because I don't know if he's going to talk about Boomer when he comes on the air. So we'll do it next right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Oh, man, getting excited for the NFL draft. Let's do this already. Let's draft some players, for goodness sake. VSiN have, of course, a draft special that will take place during the draft. It's our VSiN 2020 draft special live Thursday night. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Our draft betcasters will include Matt Eumanns, Brent Musburger, Jonathan Von Tobel, and of course the esteemed Michael Lombardi, who's about to join us. Other special guests as well to analyze the draft from our unique betting perspective, track all the props. They'll tell you when they cash. It's the VSiN 2020 Draft Special live Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And now, ladies and gentlemen, his show's coming up at the top of the hour. It's called The Lombardi Line, exclusively on VSiN. He's got a dynamite. Do we still use the word dynamite? Dynamite podcast, GM Shuffle. The book is Gridiron Genius. And, of course, he writes for The Athletic. He will also make you some great Italian food and is a connoisseur of such things.
No, I won't.
Oh, you won't? You're not doing?
Millie
you,
will. You're not the Millie originator? Will. I won't. Yeah, no, I am not the originator. This coronavirus is killing me in terms of the quarantine. I mean, there's too much cooking going on in there.
It's Michael Lombardi, everybody, at M. Lombardi NFL. All right, Michael, let's start with this because, of course, I have a couple questions for you. But let's start with this. This is I just played the clip, the last segment of you on this show talking about Tua and a couple failed physicals. This is Boomer Esiason on his show on WFAN talking about you.
And the other thing, and it goes back to the Tua Tagovailoa stuff with Mike Lombardi. Like who the hell was Mike Lombardi to be reporting that Tua had broken a wrist in spring practice and then rebroke it? Like, how does he find out that information? Because he's close friends with Nick Saban, and has Nick Saban given Mike Lombardi that information so Mike Lombardi can go running out there and just absolutely try to discredit a kid? I find something wrong with that, and I understand that Lombardi and Mike Tannenbaum both, you know, they're in the media now. They were on the other side. Now they're on the dark side, and they have contacts, they have information, and they use that information. And I get all of that stuff, but I do think that there's a violation here somewhere along the line that somebody is outing players and their health issues when those things should be kept private. I think.
Michael, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, he doesn't think. That's the problem. He has no idea what he's talking about. I mean, the reality of it is he knows nothing about the draft. I mean, he's just spouting off information. But he sits on his throne at WFAN, and he thinks he's got franchisitis. You know, he can just say whatever he wants. And because he's on WFAN, he becomes this, oh, my gosh. Like, make a point. Like, make a point, Boomer. Like, tell me what I did wrong. Discredit the kid. The kid had the injuries. If you watched football on Saturday afternoon, you saw the kid get injured. Nick Saban hasn't talked to me about it. I don't have to talk to Nick Saban. It's common knowledge. If you would do a little bit of work, just a little bit of work, to prepare your audience so you could educate your audience about what's going on in the National Football League, that might be a better show than taking a shot at me. I didn't discredit anybody. The fact remains, you discredited yourself by that idiotic statement you made.
Michael Lombardi addressing Boomer, just to clarify, and not me on that. It really is the word discredit that got you a little riled up.
Actually, no, I think it was that he put me in the same category as Mike Tannenbaum. Might have really irked me a little bit, but the discredit thing, you know, is like at some point, like seriously, like why are you saying this? Like where is your story? Like if you study the draft, durability injuries are a huge critical component of it. I didn't make that up. I didn't say, you know, that he did something as a child or, you know, had this problem. I didn't make anything up. I just said, here's the reality. Now, if you want to make no statements, if you want to be on FAN and just pontificate about subjects and, you know, you want everybody to like you, feel free.
Boomer Esiason, always invited on this show, and per Adnan Virk,
he's not
always
coming
invited
on. Are you kidding?
GM
he's
Shuffle.
Not coming on. He's not coming just, on. Are you kidding me?
Just wanted to point that out, Michael.
I mean, as they said about Paulie and The Godfather, that's the last we'll see of him.
That's the last we'll see of him. Did you see this back and forth on Twitter yesterday between the Jags owner's son and their standout defensive end in Guake yesterday? It got real personal. It got real nasty. You know, on the one hand, I thought the owner's son, comported himself well. On the other hand, I'm like, well, why did you even engage him at all? But it's basically over a contract issue. You've been in the room, so to speak, again, in NFL front offices. How did you view that?
First of all, I think they should take Tony's Twitter account away from him. First of all, the second thing they should do is keep Tony, tell Tony what the draft is on May the 15th and keep him away from the draft. Because if you look at their Tony Khan, if you look at their drafting history, it's been atrocious. The organization has been a disaster. So here's the reality. Let's keep it out of this fight on Twitter. The Jacksonville Jaguars since 2011 have lost over 10 games in every season except one, the year they finished behind the Patriots in the conference championship game. They've had one winning season. Like, at some point, you're the model of a horrendous franchise. You are the model of a horrendous franchise. You've kept a general manager who's been picking in the top 10 since 2013, all but one season, and only has now two players on the team. They're going to trade Fournette soon. So, don't engage anybody, and then don't tell me you're working on the draft. Like, seriously, the problem with your organization is you have nobody that really understands what it takes to be a successful organization. And if you think you're working on the draft, you know, there's a lot of people that watch tape. There's very few people that study tape, and that's the problem.
Well said. Look, we've batted this draft around and how we think this order is going to go every which way. I'll try to ask something that I haven't asked of you before, which is just the sort of buzz lately. I had Evan Silva on a couple days ago, and now I've seen sort of a little bit of a wave of Derek Brown going number three. I want to say you were the first person I might have heard that from, Michael. Derek Brown going to the Lions at number three. Do you think that could happen? And if it should happen.
He should happen. They need, look, you don't win with corners in the NFL. You win with defensive linemen. The 49ers proved that. Once the 49ers defensive line got tired, you know, their secondary got exposed, couldn't play man, can't play zone. So, yeah, I mean, Derek Brown can rush inside, get into the paint. I think if you read The Athletic, Bob McGinn, he was the former beat writer for the Green Bay Packers, wrote for the Green Bay Press Gazette. He's had done remarkable work on the draft for most of his career. In fact, when I was in the league, he was a nuisance. He would constantly call you up about the draft. I just had to divorce myself from him. I love Bob. He's tremendous. As a fan, I would urge people to read his column. He wrote about how Isaiah Simmons is really viewed by differently in the league than by the perception outside the league. And I've heard that by numerous people, by a lot of people, that there's really no position, that the scheme allowed him to be successful at Clemson, and his speed allowed him to be successful. But teams are having a hard time figuring out what to do with him. There's more of a mischance with Simmons than there is a his chance. He's straight line speed. He's not overly athletic with bend and lateral quickness. I think McGinn's onto something. I think this guy is going to slip.
Every time you say scheme, Michael, a little part of me giggles inside.
Scheme.
Just want to
point scheme. That out. Yeah, scheme. We got to stop scheming, please. Yeah.
So the follow-up then is, if Derek Brown goes number three to the Lions, let's say that does happen, would the Giants, let me choose my words carefully, would the Giants be sort of lured into not taking an offensive tackle and maybe taking Okuda at four, because they never have good corners in New York?
No, The Giants should stick to the theory of, look, we win games with offensive and defensive linemen. I mean, I don't care. I know it's not sexy. I know it's boring. But the game comes down to offensive and defensive linemen. How many ones you have when you travel, it really comes down to when you take those 10 players, add another pass rusher in the defensive line. If you can get six or seven blue chip, red chip players in that category, you're going to be a hell of a football team. You're going to be a hell of a football team. And that's the goal. And if I'm the Giants, I'm taking the best tackle. If Derek Brown made it to me at four, I would take Derek Brown if I were the New York Giants. I would rescind the tender on Leonard Williams, the most idiotic thing possible I've ever seen, and then have a real legitimate pass rushing defensive tackle.
What's the thing, Michael? Broad question. I'll leave you with this. What's the one thing up at the top, and I've asked this of other people, but I don't think I've asked it of you, that would just be the surprise that blows all of this up? What could you possibly see happening where you're like, this is the one thing that could blow all of our thoughts up on this draft?
I think if the Redskins trade two, I don't believe they will. If they trade out of two, I think it'll blow it up, because somebody's coming up not to get Chase Young, because the Redskins are going to pick Chase Young. If somebody gets into two, they want a quarterback, and that would be Herbert, based on what I'm told. And that would leave the Lions with Chase Young, and I think that would blow everything up.
Jeez. I still say, and I've never wavered on this, I think the Redskins do take Chase Young. But yeah, you're right. That would totally blow it up. Michael, I leave you with a documentary recommendation. The Pharmacist on Netflix. Have you seen this?
I have not. I've got to get to it. I've been too much into the singer-songwriters from the 70s. I've got to get move out of that. It's fabulous. The other one I recommend strongly to you, Gil, is Sinatra at Palm Springs. Just absolutely fabulous. Oh.
So I'm always down for Sinatra. Michael, give you some time to prepare for your show. The Lombardi Line coming up top of the hour. Thank you as always, Michael. I appreciate
Thank you,
man.
Gil. Mm-hmm.
Michael Lombardi. And when I say the best in the biz, I often throw that out with some of my favorite guests because I love my guests, my regulars. But Michael Lombardi is the best in the biz. That dude tells it like it is. And it was generous of him. And he wouldn't even use the word generous, but to respond to the boomer comments, because as Michael told me offline, you think I care? Though he didn't really use the word care, if you know what I mean. Thank you to Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Chris Felica. Thank you to Alan Boston for the third of three appearances on the show. Doesn't get better than that trifecta.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.